It was something like Back to the Future in Scotland this week, as ScotRail was taken into public ownership. In the last 30 years or so, we've had privatisation of the lines and train companies, renationalisation of the rail network, arm's length train companies, public ownership of the East Coast mainline, and now full circle in Scotland at least. So what should passengers expect? And is there anything we can learn from other countries about how they operate a railway system? I'm joined now by Jane Ann Lisson of the passenger group Rail Future, who's also a Lib Dem councillor in Fife, and the railway journalist Philip Haig. Good morning to you both.
Morning.
Good morning.
Jane Ann, just tell us, what did you make of the news this week for passengers? Good thing?
I suspect it won't make very much difference at all. I can just say that yesterday I did travel by train, and the difference I noticed from previous journeys was that no one bothered to come and check my ticket, so I could actually have travelled free of charge as I wanted to. But maybe that was just a coincidence. But I don't think whoever's running the railways, it's not really going to make much difference, I'd have thought.
And Philip, does nationalising a rail service make a difference in itself, or will that depend how things unfold? It's obviously only happened yesterday.
It will depend on how things unfold. It will depend on what Scottish ministers want from the railway they're now owning and operating. And it will depend crucially on how passengers react. The railway is in desperate need of getting its passengers back. That is the big short term challenge for the new owners of ScotRail. Get passengers back on trains.
And how does it go about doing that?
Well, it needs to put forward an attractive offer. It needs to run a good timetable. Tempting people onto the railways. It needs to run trains punctually so they run on time. They need to offer seats, and crucially they need to offer fares that are attractive to people and can attract them from buses and cars.
Jane, does that cover it from your passenger group point of view? Is that what people are looking for? Is that what they need to tempt them back?
You could say what is wanted is the trains have to take people where they want to go, when they want to go, and at a reasonable price. And things like seats, toilets, and catering come after that, I would say. But the first three is what is needed. So that's why I'm saying it doesn't really matter who's running the trains. I think that was absolutely right, saying you've got to have an attractive option. But I don't think the omens are very good, though, because what we've had in the run-up to the renationalisation was the services have been cut. The ticket office opening hours have or are going to be cut. The fares have gone up, I think, by 3.8%, was it? Which is considerably more than usual. And the latest I've heard, it sounds as if ScotRail don't want to bother bringing back catering at all on the trains. They took them off for COVID, but they now seem to think, well, we'll not bother. Now, I ask myself, is that going to attract people out of their nice, comfortable cars back onto the trains? I fear the answer is no.
Philip, how do they do it elsewhere? Are there lessons we could learn from Scotland looking elsewhere?
I think you do see things elsewhere. It's something that caught my eye the other day. Was one of the European capitals. I think it was Brussels, but as they say, don't quote me on that. But anyway, this particular city cut its fares in half on days when high pollution was forecast as a way of driving that environmental thing, encouraging people out of their cars on polluted days onto public transport. That struck me as a really good idea that Scottish ministers could take forward.
So does that suggest that if you are, as a government, running a railway, you're not doing it for profit but for a service?
I think it does in many cases. Scotland's railway has long needed public subsidy, even on some of the busier routes. I think a couple of years ago, Abellio, when it was running the network, said that only the main Edinburgh-Glasgow route actually turned a profit. It didn't really, because that was before Network Rail's cost. So all the other lines in Scotland demand public subsidy. So from that angle, it is a public service, and it's one that taxpayers should support. The arguments will be about the amount of taxpayer support, because if, for example, the trade unions successfully pursue their claim for an above inflation pay rise, that's likely to put costs up, and if fares don't follow or passenger numbers don't follow, then the bill lands on taxpayers.
Jean Anne, Fife is in the process of getting a new railway line to Leven, which is being built at the moment. There are also proposals for, you know, St Andrews and places like that. How important is it for a lot of these communities that they are connected to the railway network? Because the problem for government will be that if a lot of these lines don't make a profit at a time when, you know, finances are already quite tight, it's maybe not something a government wants to take on, but do you see big benefits to opening a lot of these old lines?
Well, it has to be if it gets people out of cars. We've got emission targets to reach. The Scottish Government has said they want to reduce car mileage by a fifth, and they want to double the number of train journeys. Now, it doesn't seem to me that you're going to do that by cutting services. And in fact, looking at the gaps in the rail network, you've mentioned some in Fife, they are going to have to expand the network. Otherwise, you're not going to get the step change that's required. The case for St Andrews is that it's a destination. There are thousands of people that come every year, and they all come by road. For some reason, they don't want to come by bus, and that COVID has not helped that, because people have decided they don't want to go on buses, they're all driving cars into the town, and it's not sustainable. Newborough is another case in point, and that really has no good transport links at all, not public transport links, so they need to be connected to places like Cooper and to Perth, and a railway line would do that. And there's also the South West Fife line, which would come from over the border in Alloa, and that could come and connect up into Dunfermline with stations at the likes of perhaps Curus and Kearney Hill, and that would make a big difference, because at the moment these people have got no option but to travel by road, and because buses don't cut the mustard for whatever reason, they're all driving about in cars.
Phil, just very briefly, do you see much scope for the reopening of extra lines? I mean, I know the Scottish Government have opened a lot of new stations and lines over the years, but as I say, it is costly.
It is costly. It needs a lot of people to travel to justify it. But that's why I think it's important that they look very carefully at opening stations in conjunction with major new housing estates, because that provides the people to use the trains and make the whole thing worthwhile.
Okay, thank
you. Got the people.
Well, thank you both. That was Jean Anne Liston of the passenger group Rail Future and the railway journalist Philip Hay. Thanks for joining us both.